Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cage Chat with Sioux Falls Canaries manager Mike Meyer. Cage Chat is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux Falls manager questions about the Canaries, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Mike's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, Mike talks about trades that he came to regret. He discusses why Ben Moore was so successful pitching in Sioux Falls, and what's the greatest moment in his baseball career. Let's find out on Cage Chat.
Let's welcome back manager Mike Meyer. Mike, do you have team updates for us?
You know, I don't. It's been pretty slow these last few weeks and kind of just sorting out things and, you know, trying to figure out if our visa guys are going to get approved and if they are, when they're going to be able to come back to the States. And if not, how are we going to replace those guys? But other than that, it's been kind of quiet. There's been a few days on the American Association transactions where there hasn't been any transactions, which is, it never happens this time of year. So we're kind of trying to, I think everybody's just trying to figure out, you know, who's going to be available, what's going to happen with Major League Baseball, is there going to be releases coming out of organizations? And so, you know, that's kind of been what I've been doing, to see a bunch of different roster scenarios and what our needs would be if different things happen.
Well, let's jump into fan questions. We have two from Reed to start out with. The first was, have you ever made a trade you regretted?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've made some trades that weren't in the best interest of us, but it was because the players wanted to move on. So I'm never going to be a manager that holds players hostage. I just don't think that that's the right way to handle things. And, you know, the one that comes to mind the most would be Blake Schmidt. I love Blake to death. We're still pretty close. You know, I just was texting with him, you know, a couple of weeks ago. You know, but he wanted to play in the playoffs. He had never been in the playoffs. He was going to probably be shutting it down. At least he thought he was going to shut it down. And so I had known that he wanted, you know, he was probably going to shut it down. And so when the call came from Sioux City that they were interested, you know, I called him in my hotel room. We were on the road and said, would this be something that you would want to do? And he goes, are you serious? You'd do that? And I said, yeah, of course. And he goes, I just want to win. I want to play in the playoffs. And we had recently been kind of knocked out. And so I made the deal, and it didn't really work out for us. None of the pieces that we got back actually were on our roster for more than a few weeks. You know, but obviously it was the right move for Blake, and he ended up, you know, being in the playoffs in Sioux City that year and then won a championship in St. Paul this year. So, you know, obviously we're happy for him.
I like him too. He's quite a guy.
Yeah, so. Great guy.
Also, Reed would like to know, how hard is it for you to tell guys you were trading or releasing them?
Well, trading has never been an issue for me because I always talk to them before and let them know the situation and, you know, just say, hey, look, you deserve more money like Lago this year. I told them, I said, I can't pay you what you deserve, you know, and so I'm going to try to move you, and I kind of try to figure out what would be a good fit for them. And we, you know, talk about it together. Same thing with Vertigan this year. He had made comments that, you know, he wasn't sure if he was going to continue to play, but if he did, he kind of wanted to move around and not be in the same place, you know, for more than a year, just to be a part of a different division, you know. And so we kind of started talking, and Milwaukee seemed like it was a good fit. But so trading guys, it's never difficult for me. Releasing guys is always difficult. Even when I've had some players that, you know, were not the highest caliber men, and you know, we needed to move them, not because of their playing abilities, but because of their attitude. But even then, it's always tough. You know, but when you've got a guy that's a good dude and he works hard and he's busting his tail for you, it's never a good feeling. It always makes me sick, you know, and it's just part of the job. That's, you know, it's not a fun part of the job, but it's, you know, a necessity.
Donnie would like to know, he says, you talk a lot about Ben Moore and his success in Sioux Falls. I was looking at his numbers, an ERA over 5 in his first 2 years, and then he drops to nearly 3 in his third. What does he do to improve so much?
Yeah, so, you know, Ben was exclusively a changeup pitcher his first couple of seasons with us. And, you know, it took me, he's a very stubborn person, and it took me a long time to beat into his head that he had a really good breaking ball, that he needed to throw his breaking ball, and that he needed to throw his fastball more, even though he was only throwing 85, 86. You know, I kept telling him, look, you got to throw your fastball. You got to throw your fastball. But his changeup was so good that whenever he would get in trouble, it was automatically just going changeup, 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 changeup. And he was able to survive and, you know, win some games for us and be an okay pitcher. But he never reached his max potential because they would just go up there, and especially when he was in trouble, they would just sit changeup. And, you know, the better hitters, even though it's an unbelievable, devastating pitch, they were able to sit back long enough and do damage with it. And I think the 1 year he gave up 25 home runs, and I'd say 20 of them were on, you know, elevated changeups that the following year he would get swing and misses on. But because he was exclusively just a changeup guy, you know, he was getting hit with those, you know, and I think it was 09. So finally, going into the very end of the 09 season, you know, I told him in the bullpen, I said, look, you're a power pitcher. And he looked at me like I was nuts. I said, no, it doesn't matter about velocity, but look at your strikeouts. You're always in the top of strikeouts. You're a power guy. You need to throw your fastball. And you need to start, you know, throwing your breaking ball. And so he got confident, you know, throwing his little sweeper breaking ball. We kind of just dropped his hand underneath the ball a little bit, so it was more side to side instead of up and down. And he really liked the way that felt in his hand. And his last, like, two starts in 09, he was devastated. And it just snowballed from there. I had to convince Steve Shirley, our manager. It took me the whole offseason to bring him back. I said, look, this guy's going to dominate the league. And he's like, the guy had a 5.5 ERA. I said, I don't care. Just bring him back. So we did. And the rest is history. He was able to use all three pitches, any count, any location, to any hitter, and, you know, was the best pitcher in the league for a couple of years.
Wow, a starting pitcher, stubborn. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, I tell you, if some guys, they want to tweak something every minute. It's like, I need to change this. I need to change this grip. I need to change that. And then there's other guys that won't change for the life of them, you know? And so it's tough, and you got to learn your personalities. And some guys, you got to give them a kick in the rear end. Some guys, you got to change their diaper every day. It just, you know, it depends on who they are to try to get the max out of them.
Donnie would also like to know, with Ben Moore having such a big year in 2010 and a hitter-friendly park like the Birdcage, I'm surprised he did not get picked back up. Was that just because of his age?
Well, partly age, but mostly it was velocity. You know, unfortunately in our game, especially in the modern game, but even in the 90s, you know, in 2000s, the easiest way to read how successful a pitcher is going to be is their velocity. And if you're a scout, you can say, hey, we need to sign this guy. This guy can pitch in the big leagues now. Because Ben, at that time, no doubt in my mind, you could stick Ben in a big league rotation, and he would be a 500 pitcher with a high 4 ERA in the big leagues, which would have been serviceable for a lot of clubs. But if you're a scout that's going to your brass and saying, we got to sign this guy can really pitch. And they say, well, how hard is he throwing? You say 84, 85. They're going to laugh in your face, and you're probably going to get fired. But if you go to your brass and say, hey, we've got to sign this guy, and they say, well, what's this stuff like? This guy's got, you know, 8 walks per 9 innings. But you say he throws 95, they say, let's do it, let's sign him. It's because that 95 guy, if he ever figures out how to throw strikes or, you know, develops a secondary pitch, then they know stuff-wise he can compete at that level. But a guy that throws 84, 85, he has to be perfect with everything he does to be successful in the big leagues. You know, and so it's really hard, and they don't usually sign anybody unless they throw low to mid-90s.
I think that's so sad, too, because I think of some of the great pitchers I watched in the 80s and 90s, they wouldn't even be considered now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's sad. And the art of pitching has kind of gone by the wayside. You know, we just don't have, you know, the Greg Maddux, Tom Glavins, you know, out there anymore that are able to move the ball around and change speeds, change arm angles, change locations. You know, so it's, you know, it's pretty sad.
Darren says, you used this term last week, and I was wondering if you could explain pronating your arm to us.
All right. So hold your arm out and have a can, an open can of Campbell's soup in your hand. And imagine yourself dumping that can into the pot to heat up. That's pronating. So every time we throw a pitch, our hand turns over like that as if we're dumping a can of soup into a pot.
That was a sensational explanation right there, boy.
can you picture it?
Yes, I sure can. That's a great way to describe that. Steve says, as an athlete, do you think it is necessary to drink the same amount of water each day in a place like South Dakota as you would in Arizona?
It's definitely different. Definitely different. You know, I'll never forget my first spring training and being in the Florida State League and being down in Florida. I would get one of those big, I don't know how, a gallon of Gatorade. I think it was a gallon. And I would drink that and fill, you know, drink half and fill it with water and drink, you know, just keep refilling it. And I would probably have 5-6 of those a day. And just my ears would be on fire and red, and I was dehydrated. I could just never catch up. I could never catch up, you know, and I was born and raised in Arizona where, you know, you're living on the sun. You know, but that humidity would just suck the water out of me. And then, you know, there's times in South Dakota when it's, you know, pretty nice out and temperate, you know, conditions, and, you know, you don't necessarily need to drink as much there. But hydration is always a big thing no matter where you are, and it's, you know, you can feel it in your muscles. And anybody that's ever done any heavy exercise, if you go out for a jog and, you know, you haven't been hydrated, you're either going to hurt a lot worse the next day or you're going to cramp up. So we always try to make sure that our guys are hydrating and not drinking too much of the, you know, Gatorades or Powerades and not getting that much sugar. So
Bill would like to know, if it's just you and your wife and you don't have any kids, what's wrong with drinking directly out of the milk container? The germs are the same whether I put them on the milk container and then I kiss her, so what does it matter?
Yeah, that's a good point. Valid point. I would say maybe because the germs are staying on the container or in the milk and they're cultivating and growing, and, you know, where if you kiss your wife, you know, you're brushing your teeth and, you know, you're drinking water and thing and all that sort of thing. So, you know, every day we're getting rid of a bunch of bacteria in our mouth when we floss and brush our teeth, where I imagine, and I'm not a scientist, but I imagine the bacteria that's on the milk container is would continue to grow. That would be the only difference.
Ryan says, I need a little advice here. My wife caught me reading her diary. What can I do to make it up to her?
Ooh, yeah, I don't know that there's anything you can make it up to her. I tell you. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'd say give her some space for a minute. Let her calm down a little bit. And be honest. Tell her why you were reading her diary. You know, open yourself up so that she you know, she can see what would cause you to do such a thing.
Lisa says, Mike, listening to the show last week and you talking about apples to apples made me think you're a pretty competitive guy all the time. Is that true?
Yeah, it really is. You know, but in a good way. Like, I'm not one of those Little League dads that throws garbage cans on the field and gets thrown out of Little League games or anything like that. You know, I coach the 5th and 6th grade YMCA basketball team, and anybody that goes and watches us, they can see how competitive I am on the sideline as I'm jumping up and down and waving my arms and screaming. But it's in a positive, you know, manner. Like, I never yell at the kids. You know, I never say anything to the referees. But, yes, of course. I was kind of raised in an environment where, you know, you're competing always, every day. And what's the sense of doing anything if you're not trying to be the best, you're not trying to win? So, yeah, when it's it gets me in a little bit of trouble at home with my wife, you know, because I don't even mean to, but I have a tendency to be competing for, you know, parents of the year, you know, and all, not on purpose. It just happens that way, you know, where it's always everything's a competition for me.
And we end with two from Cam this week. The first is, what was the hardest you ever threw?
So velocity, I was usually 90 to 92, but I would go and I would hit some 93s and 4s. But, and that was pretty consistent for, you know, a few years in the peak of my career. I want to say 2002 through 4, probably. 2002, 3, and 4 was when I was throwing my hardest. But I had one year, I had gotten released by the Cardinals, and I went to the Northern League Eastern Division, and I was pitching in Allentown, which was, that was a bandbox. That was like Disneyland baseball. It was crazy. We had huge, like, 50-foot-high nets. If you hit a pop-up and it hit the net, it was a double, and if you hit it over the net, it was a home run. It was terrible. But anyways, I was coming out of the bullpen, and, you know, I just had kind of worked with Rick Wise, our pitching coach, and smoothed out my mechanics a little bit. And the next thing you know, I was pretty consistently 92, 93, and hitting a lot of fours regularly. So that was my best velo as far as, you know, for a season. And then the rest of the time I was, you know, usually 90, 92. And I hit a 3 or a 4 once a game.
Awesome. And Cam ends with, what was the greatest moment in the history of baseball to you, and what is your greatest moment in baseball?
Okay, so I've got two of the greatest moments. It's kind of 1A and B. First one would be 2004. I was a member of St. Paul Saints, and we played arguably the greatest series of any sport ever played with Schaumburg in the championship series, 5-game series. And it came down to game 5, and we were losing 6-3 in the bottom of the 9th inning at Midway. And with 2 outs and a runner on second, we scored 7 runs. We had a walk-off grand slam to win the championship. So that was crazy. But my best moment probably was 2008, Sioux Falls. My manager, Steve Shirley, threw blood clots, you know, pulmonary embolism, and was sent home. And here was, I'm a couple of years out from playing, and the next thing you know, I'm managing and the pitching coach, and our hitting coach at the time took a teaching position, so he was gone. So I was the pitching coach, manager, and hitting coach all at the same time. And I was like 31 years old and just out of playing. And I learned a lot in that 50 games or 60 games, whatever it was that I was managing. But we kept it together, made the playoffs, and went through and won the championship, the only championship in Sioux Falls Canaries history. We walked off in the 12th inning, and I think the reason why it's the most special moment for me was because when I was done playing and I got offered the pitching coach job in Sioux Falls, I had a lot of people tell me, don't take it. You can't win there. And 2 years later, we're winning the American Association title. So it was pretty special. And I just, every night, I think about bringing another title back to Sioux Falls and giving, the fans what they deserve.
That's awesome. And what would you say is the greatest moment in baseball history?
God, I don't know. That's tough. In baseball history, huh? Oh, man.
He put you on the spot on this one.
Yeah, and there's so many things that have happened. I tell you, I mean, obviously, I wasn't around for 100 years of it or whatever, but I can tell you one moment that I think will last forever, and it was not even a baseball player that was involved, but it was when George Bush threw out the first pitch after September 11th and piped a perfect strike in there. It kind of got the country back on its feet and going. I think that was bigger than just baseball, but that's the one thing I think baseball does for our country. It's our pastime, and hopefully we can be a small part of getting the country going again after we're done with this coronavirus.
That was an awesome memory. Thanks for joining us this week, Mike.
All right, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
We want to thank manager Mike Meyer for joining us on Cage Chat this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux Falls manager, please send them to us at askmike@minorleaguesportsupport.com. That's askmike@minorleaguesportsupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pinier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Cage Chat.